Nathaniel, Chapter 40.
"This really is most tedious," the Jinni said. "Nothing's going to happen."
Nathaniel paused in his circuit of the room.
"Of course it will. Be silent. If I want your opinion, I'll ask for it."
He was aware his voice carried no conviction. He glanced at his watch to reassure himself.
"The night's still young?"
"Sure, sure. I can see you're wildly confident. You've already worn a small furrow in the floorboards, and I bet you're powerful hungry, too, since you forgot to bring provisions."
"I won't need them. She'll turn up soon. Now shut up about it."
From its station at the top of an old wardrobe, the Jinni, which was back in the form of a young Egyptian boy, stretched its arms above its head and yawned extravagantly.
"All great master plans have their drawbacks," it said. "They all have their little flaws, which make them tumble into ruin. That's human nature. You're born imperfect. The girl won't come. You'll wait. You haven't bought any food. Therefore, you and your captive will starve."
Nathaniel scowled. "Don't worry about him. He's all right."
"Actually, I am quite hungry."
Jacob Hernick was sitting on a decrepit chair in one corner of the room. Beneath an old army greatcoat, which the Jinni had located in one of the safe house attics, he wore nothing but pajamas and a pair of king-size bed socks.
"I didn't have any breakfast," he added,
rocking back and forth mechanically on his wonky chair.
"I could do with a bite."
"There you are, you see," the Jinni said. "He's peckish." "He's not. And if he knows what's good for him, he'll stay quiet, too." Nathaniel resumed his pacing, eyeing the captive sidelong as he did so. Hernek seemed to have got over his fear of the flight by now, and since he'd been immediately shut up in the empty house with no one else to see him, his paranoia about his face had quietened down a bit, too. The actual captivity didn't appear to bother him much, which slightly perplexed Nathaniel. Then again, Hernek had been in a self-imposed prison for years. The magician's gaze strayed towards the window, hidden behind its swathe of sheeting. He quelled a desire to step across and peer out into the night.
Patience. The girl would come. All it took was time.
"How about a game?"
The boy on the wardrobe grinned down at him. "I could find us a ball and wall hoop and teach you to the Aztec ball game. It's great fun. You have to use your knees and elbows to get the ball through the hoop. That's the only rule. Oh, and the losers get sacrificed. I'm very good at it, as you'll discover."
Nathaniel waved his hand wearily. "No."
"I spy, then?"
Nathaniel blew out hard through his nose. It was difficult enough to remain calm without the Jinni's jabbering. He was playing for high stakes here, and the consequences of failure did not bear thinking about. Mr. Makepeace had visited him early that morning in secret, bringing news. His underworld contact believed he could gain access to the fugitive Kitty Jones, and that it would be possible to tempt her out of hiding if a suitable goad could be discovered. Nathaniel's swift and inventive mind had immediately turned to her childhood friend, Jacob Hernek, who had been mentioned in the records of her trial, and to whom Kitty had a proven loyalty. From what Nathaniel had seen of her—here he gingerly fingered the purpling bruise on his cheek—the girl would not be afraid to come to Hernek's aid, if danger threatened. The rest was easy. Hernek's capture had been rapidly effected, and Makepeace had conveyed word of it to his contact. All Nathaniel had to do now was wait.
"Psst!"
He looked up. The Jinni was beckoning him over, all the while nodding and winking with furious confidentiality.
"What?" "Come over here a minute. Out of earshot."
It nodded towards Hernek, rocking back and forth in his chair a little way across the room. With a sigh, Nathaniel stepped close.
"Well?"
The Jinni bent its head over the lip of the wardrobe.
"I've been thinking," it whispered. "What's going to happen to you when your precious Ms. Whitwell finds out about this? Because she doesn't know you've snatched the boy, does she? I don't understand what game you're playing here. You're usually such a well-behaved little underling, a petted lapdog eager to please."
The barb hit home. Nathaniel bared his teeth.
"That time is past," he said. "She won't find out until I have the girl and the staff under lock and key.
Then she'll have to clap with the rest of them. I'll be too close to Devereux for any of them to do anything other than cheer.
The boy arranged itself to sit neatly cross-legged, in a manner reminiscent of an Egyptian scribe.
"You're not doing this on your own," it said. "Someone's helped you set it all up. Someone who knows how to find the girl and tell her we're here. You don't know where she is, or you'd have caught her yourself by now."
"I've got contacts."
"Contacts who know a great deal about the resistance, it would seem." "You'd better be careful, Nat. Things like that can work both ways. That hairy police chief would give his carnassials to link you somehow with those traitors. If he knew you were doing deals with them..."
"I'm not doing deals!"
"Ooh, that was a shout. You're agitated."
"I'm not."
"I'm just saying. I'm capturing her, aren't I? I just want to do it my own way."
"Fine. But who's your contact? How does he or she know so much about the girl? That's what you should be asking."
"It's not important. And I don't want to talk any more about it."
Nathaniel turned his back. The Jinnee was right, of course. The ease with which Makepeace delved into the underworld was startling. But the theatre was a disreputable profession. Makepeace was bound to know all kinds of odd commoners. Actors, dancers, writers, who were only one notch above the criminal type. Uneasy as he was with his sudden new alliance, Nathaniel was quite happy to reap the benefits of it, provided all went well. But he would be in a parlous position should Duval or Whitwell discover that he had been acting behind their backs. That was the main risk he was running. Both of them had asked for updates that morning about his activities. To both of them he had lied. It gave him a prickly sensation at the back of his neck. Jacob Hernick held up a plaintive hand.
"Excuse me, sir."
"What?"
"Please, Mr. Mandrake, I'm getting a bit chilly."
"Well, get up and walk about, then. But keep those stupid socks out of my sight."
Wrapping the coat tightly about him, Hernick began to shuffle about the room, his candy-coloured striped bed-socks peeping out incongruously from under his pyjamas.
"Hard to believe anyone would risk their life for this specimen," the Jinnee observed. "If I was his mother, I'd look the other way."
"You haven't met this Kitty," Nathaniel said. "She'll come for him."
"She won't."
Hernick was standing near the window now. He'd overheard this last exchange.
"We used to be close, but not any more. I haven't seen her for years."
"Even so," Nathaniel said, "she'll come."
"Not since my face was ruined,"
the boy went on. His voice throbbed with self-pity.
"Oh, give me a break!" Nathaniel's tension exploded into annoyance. "Your face is fine. You can talk, can't you? You can see, hear? Well, then, stop complaining. I've seen far worse."
"That's what I told him."
The Jinnee negligently stood and hopped down from the wardrobe without a sound.
"He's far too het up about it. Look at your face. That's permanent, too, and you're not afraid to parade it to the world."
"Nope, for both of you, it's your hair that's the real downer. I've seen better styles on the back end of a badger. Just give me 5 minutes with a pair of shears."
Nathaniel rolled his eyes and sought to reassert some authority. He grabbed Hernick's collar and spun him round.
"Back to your chair," he snarled. "Sit down. As for you," he addressed the Jinnee, "my contact man will have given the girl this address some hours ago. She will be on her way now, almost certainly with a staff, since that is her most powerful weapon. When she enters the stair below, a sensory sphere will be triggered and sound the alert up here. You are to disarm her as she comes through the door. Hand me the staff and prevent her escape. Got that?"
"Clear as daylight, boss. As it was the fourth and fifth times, you told me."
"Just don't forget. Get the staff. That's the important bit."
"Don't I know it? I was at the fall of Prague, remember?"
Nathaniel grunted and resumed his pacing. Even as he did so, there was a sound in the street outside. He turned to the Jinnee, wide-eyed.
"What was that?"
"A voice. Man's."
"Did you hear? There it is again."
The Jinnee indicated the window. "Do you want me to look?"
"Don't let yourself be seen."
The Egyptian boy sidled to the window, vanished. A scarab beetle crawled behind the sheeting. A bright light flared somewhere beyond the glass.
Nathaniel hopped from one foot to the other.
"Well?"
"I think your girl's arrived." The Jinni's voice sounded small and distant. "Why don't you take a peek?" Nathaniel ripped the sheeting aside and looked out, in time to see a small sheet of flame flare up from the ground halfway down the road. It died back. On the previously deserted street were many running forms, some on two legs, some on four, and some that were evidently undecided about the matter, but were still gamely lolloping along under the bright moon. There was a snapping and a howling. Nathaniel felt the colour drain from his face.
"Oh, hell!" he said. "The night police!"
Another small blast. The room shook mildly. A slight and agile two-legged form sprinted across the road and leaped through a newly blown hole in the wall of a building. A wolf pursued her, only to be engulfed by a further explosion. The scarab beetle whistled approvingly.
"Nice use of an elemental sphere. Your girl's good. Even so, she'll hardly evade the whole battalion."
"How many are there?"
"A dozen, perhaps more. Look, they're coming over the rooftops."
"You think they'll catch?"
"Oh, yes, and eat her. They're angry now. Their blood's up."
"All right."
Nathaniel stood away from the window. He had come to a decision.
"Bartimaeus," he said,
"go out and get her. We can't risk her being killed."
The scarab beetle chittered in disgust.
"Another lovely job. Wonderful. Are you sure now? You'll be going directly against that police chief's authority. With luck, he won't know it's me. Take her to—"
Nathaniel's mind raced. He snapped his fingers.
"That old library. You know, the one we sheltered in when Lovelace's demons were after us? I'll take the prisoner and meet you later. We all need to get away from here."
"I'm with you on that one."
"Very well. Stand clear."
The beetle skittered backwards on the sill away from the window, rose onto its hind legs, and waved its antennae at the glass. A bright light, a spurt of heat, a lopsided hole melted in the middle of the pane. The beetle opened its wing cases and hummed out into the night. Nathaniel turned back into the room, just in time to meet a chair swinging into the side of his face. He fell to the floor, awkwardly, half-stunned. One spinning eye caught a skewed glimpse of Jacob Herneck hurling the chair aside and hurrying for the door. Nathaniel gabbled a command in Aramaic. A small imp materialized at his shoulder and loosed a lightning bolt at the seat of Herneck's pajamas. There was a sound of rapid scorching and a shrill yelp. Its work done, the imp vanished. Herneck halted momentarily, clutching at his rump, then continued his stumbling progress towards the door. By now Nathaniel had got to his feet. He flung himself forwards and down in a clumsy tackle. His outstretched hand caught hold of a bed-socked foot and pulled it sideways. Herneck fell. Nathaniel clawed himself on top of him and began slapping him frantically about the head. Herneck replied in kind. They rolled around for a while at random.
"What an unedifying spectacle."
Nathaniel froze in the act of pulling Herneck's hair. He looked up from his prone position. Jane Farrar stood in the open doorway, flanked by two hulking officers of the night police. She wore the crisp uniform and peaked cap of the Greybacks, and her eyes were openly scornful. One of the officers at her side made a guttural noise deep in his throat. Nathaniel cast through his mind for an explanation that might suffice, but found none. Jane Farrar shook her head sadly.
"How have the mighty fallen, Mr. Mandrake?" she said. "Extricate yourself, if you can, from this half-dressed commoner. You are under arrest for treason."